Good afternoon. This is Chair Ruth Richardson, and pursuant to House Rule 10.1, I call this remote hearing of the Education Policy Committee to order. Ms. Larson, if you could take the roll for attendance, please.
Chair Richardson.
Present.
Vice Chair Hassan. Vice Chair Hassan.
Ellen, I think your audio isn't coming through clearly. Can you maybe adjust your mic, please?
Thank you.
Are you able to hear me now?
Yes.
Yes, you're coming through much clearer. Thank you.
All right. Vice Chair Hassan?
Present.
Representative Erickson?
Present.
Representative Drozdowski?
Present.
Representative Bennett?
Present.
Representative Berg?
Present.
Representative Bowe?
Present.
Representative Christensen?
Present.
Representative Edelson?
Present.
Representative Feist?
Present.
Representative Frazier?
Present.
Representative Jordan?
Present.
Representative Keeler?
Present.
Representative Moeller?
Present.
Representative Mueller?
Present.
Representative Poston? Representative Poston? Representative Scott?
Present.
Representative Erdahl?
Present.
Representative Wasliwick?
Present.
Representative Poston?
Representative Poston should be excused. He had a test this morning for his eyesight, so he is recuperating. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Madam Chair, there's a quorum.
Thank you, Ms. Larson. Representative Frazier, have you had a moment to review the minutes from the February 3rd meeting?
I have, Madam Chair. I move to accept those minutes.
Thank you, Representative Frazier. All in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed? The minutes are approved. Members will be hearing three bills today, and we have established some time certain to take action on each of the bills to make sure that we can get through all the bills in the time that we have today. As you all know, we are required to end on time. So we will have House File 505, Representative Lee's bill, taking action on that at 1:25 p.m. At the latest, House File 603, Jordan's bill at 2:10 p.m., and we'll be starting the amendment process no later than 1:50 p.m. And finally, House File 561, Representative Erdahl's bill, will be taking action on that by 2:25 p.m. We will get started with House File 505, Representative Lee. I will move that House File 505 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Education Policy Omnibus Bill. Representative Lee, to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, committee members, for the opportunity to present House File 505. This is a bill regarding the early childhood family educators and adult basic educators, and is proposing to address the inequities that our early childhood family education and ABE teachers face. These educators are required to be fully licensed, but they do not have the same access to the same protection as traditional K-12 teachers. The change fixes this inequity and changes the law so that these invaluable ECFE and ABE educators are covered under the Continuing Contract Law and Teacher Tenure Act. So what does this mean for us? This means that these employees will be able to get more predictable notice of planned layoffs and will be entitled to due process upon proposed termination that all other teachers currently receive. It also enables them to participate in the full complement of activities under the Teacher Development and Evaluation Law. It will not change their current negotiated benefits, scheduling practices, or their individual entitlement to full or part-time position, which were the chief concerns raised by the districts in the past when I have brought this bill forward. Additionally, under the new tier licensing system definitions, the teachers are recognized as fully licensed teachers as their K-12 peers. The most important outcome of this proposal will be that these teachers will know that they are respected as the professional that they are. And Madam Chair, I'll leave it at that. I do have two testifiers and then we'll stand for questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Lee. First up, for your testifiers, I have Mr. Marty Schofield with the Adult Basic Education. Mr. Schofield.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and Richardson and committee members. My name is Marty Schofield. I live in Blaine and work at the Minnesota Correctional Facility in Lionel Lakes. I'm an adult basic education teacher with the Minnesota Department of Corrections. I've been teaching ABE with them for the past 20 years. The Minnesota Department of Corrections is one of the largest ABE consortia in Minnesota. Similar to other ABE programs, English language, basic skills, GED, and transitional classes are offered to students by licensed teachers. As you know, housing my students in correctional facilities is an expensive undertaking. One of the most effective ways to reduce recidivism is to provide quality education programs to students who are incarcerated. In other words, all ABE programs play an important role in Minnesota. They strengthen our communities and help students become productive members of society. Teaching ABE has been a rewarding career. Unique to this past year, COVID-19 has complicated the delivery of instruction for all educators, as we have had to make adjustments switching among face-to-face, full distance learning, and hybrid learning models. Education programs have been underfunded for a long time. In the past, an argument that I have heard is that there's not enough funding for ECFE and ABE teachers if they're given continuing contract rights. If there is one thing that this pandemic has taught us, fully funding education needs to be a priority if we want to have a quality education for all students. The reason I am here today is to ask to support House File Number 505. This bill would provide ECFE and ABE teachers to be treated equitably with other K-12 teachers. Like K-12 teachers, ABE and ECFE teachers are required to be fully licensed. I ask you to support House File 505 and provide ABE teachers the same continuing contract or Teacher Tenure Act protections as other licensed teachers. We know that whenever there is... I'm sorry.
Please continue.
Okay. We know that whenever there is an economic downturn, ABE classes are flooded with students looking to gain an edge in a competitive job market. ABE teachers provide important service to our adult learners and all of us deserve the same protections as other licensed teachers. I want to thank you for your time. If you have any questions, I'll be more than happy to answer them.
Thank you, Mr. Schofield, for your testimony. Up next, we have Kimberly Antonson with the early childhood, she's an early childhood family education teacher. Welcome to the committee.
Hello, good afternoon, Madam Chair, committee members. My name is Kimberly Antonson. I have a birth to sixth grade teaching license and a master's in early childhood education. I've been an early childhood education teacher for 21 years. I currently teach in the Wabun-Ogama-Wider School District, am also currently a school board member in the Frazee Burgess School District. I've held a number of leadership positions within Education Minnesota, including chairperson of their ECFE ABE task force, and have contributed on two EPIC projects focusing on early childhood. I've also served two terms on the Governor's Early Learning Council. My first degree was in elementary education. After a long-term subbing position in early childhood, I fell in love with teaching our youngest learners. So I made the decision to go back to college and get my early childhood degree so I could make this my profession. The work I do and the play that they are engaged in is fundamental to their brain development and preparing them for elementary school. I'm fortunate that in Ogama, the early childhood teachers have been treated equally for the last 20 years. Even that long ago, the district knew that in order to get a quality teacher in that position, they needed to offer all the benefits they could. By doing this, they have shown respect for early childhood and the teachers that love their profession. The only thing we cannot get is a continuing contract, which would put us at the same seniority, on the same seniority list as the rest of the certified staff. This would give us the same job security as our peers. Passing this bill would send the message that the Minnesota legislature values our work as highly as all other teachers. Now, I've spoken on this subject matter a number of times in the past. An argument that I always hear is that parity for ECFE and ABE teachers is just a ploy to get more educators in the union. I have chosen to be a member of the teachers union for almost as long as I have been a teacher. ECFE and ABE teachers are not asking for this bill to be passed so that they can join the union. They are asking for this to be passed so that they can be equal members of their school district. I've been told by members of my school board in the Wabanoga-Millwater district and my admin that they support giving us continued contracts. When this part of the bill passes, individual districts will still need to negotiate their contracts. So districts like mine that want this will be able to succeed. One of the most worrisome aspects of the pandemic is the disruption to early learning. We know the value of quality early learning in Minnesota, and it's time to treat our early learning teachers the same as other licensed teachers. Over this pandemic, I have heard stories from my colleagues who have been laid off without pay, had their wages cut, and all this while the regular teachers in their districts saw no changes. I cannot help but think how that would have been different if we had parity with our ECFE and ABE teachers. I would like to thank you, Madam Chair, and committee members for allowing me to speak today. If you need any further discussion, I'm always available. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. I see that there are a couple of hands that are raised. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And first of all, to you, Madam Chair, I would think that this bill should be referred to early childhood, that division, because of the change that would occur. So that's a suggestion to you that I hope you will take seriously. I have a couple questions for Representative Lee. Madam Chair, Representative Lee, how are ABE and ECFE teachers paid? From what account?
Representative Lee?
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, thank you for the question. I don't have that answer in front of me too, but I do have testifiers here who will be able to answer that question, Madam Speaker, if needed.
Who would you like to call on, Representative Lee, to assist?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I believe Ms. Meg Luger from Education Minnesota is here that's able to help answer that.
Ms. Meg Luger?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And my name is Meg Luger-Nicolai. I'm with Education Minnesota. And typically, they are paid, so they're part of the Community 4, or they receive community education grants. It's also the case that many districts charge sliding fees, so there is some self-generated revenue for this programming.
Madam Chair, Representative Foley, how about, you know, special education and regular education? How does that differ from what she just explained in regard to how ABE and ECFE are paid?
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Madam Speaker, and Representative Erickson. I apologize again. I don't have that information in front of me, and so we can follow up with that. If you do want, then Ms. Luger may be able to chime in on that point, too.
Ms. Luger, Nicolai, please.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Erickson, could you ask that question again? I didn't quite catch the...
Representative
Madam Chair. Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I'm trying to help the committee understand that these are two different funds. And so, you know, I don't object to ECFE and ABE teachers being recognized as Representative Lee is trying to do. But we have to keep in mind that they're funded from far different sources. And community education funds the ABE and the CFE programs. And as the testifier pointed out, there might also be some sliding fees, whereas regular education and special education come out of the general fund. So I'm not sure how you're going to reconcile that, Representative Lee, when there's going to be a huge increase needed for ECFE and ABE teachers if they're going to be paid from something other than what is in law right now. So I think that's something you need to think carefully about. Also, don't ABE and ECFE teachers already have the right to collectively bargain?
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And my understanding is that they are right now, and I believe that the difference is that, you know, when they bargain, it will just be with their local, and I believe when they, you know, go to a different local, it doesn't travel along with them, too. And Madam Chair, I don't want to give false information to the committee, and so if Ms. Luger could clarify that, that would be great, too.
Ms. Luger, Nicolai.
Yes, Madam Chair, and Representative Richardson, or Representative Erickson, you are correct that they do have the right to collectively bargain, but what they don't have is the right to a layoff procedure that's consistent with what other licensed teachers have. And additionally, with respect to the manner in which, you know, this won't affect the funding for the position, it just really affects how their seniority is treated, and you know, they share many commonalities with other licensed teachers, and so that seems irrespective of the funding source. So this would simply be adding one more of those commonalities. Many of those individuals are included within collective bargaining agreements, but currently the state law precludes them from having similar continuing contractor tenure rights, so that this would address that.
Thank you, Ms. Luger, Nicolai. And we, I will also remind members that we still have public testimony. So I'll take one more question from you, Representative Erickson, or comment, and then we'll move on to the public testimony. Representative
Erickson. Thank you, Madam Chair. So Representative Foley, you know, this would give the ability for an ABE or an ECFE teacher to bump let's say it's a newcomer to the teaching profession, maybe a teacher of color or American Indian, you know, so you need to keep in mind that whenever, you know, seniority rights are given to others who are outside right now the seniority list, that you might be calling for the layoff of some really great teachers for whom we have been making, you know, every effort over the years to increase the population of. So I think there are many issues to think about. And Madam Chair, again, I would hope that you re-refer this to Early Childhood Division because they need to have a thorough vetting of this.
Representative Lee, anything that you would like to say in response to that before we move to public testimony?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I don't necessarily think that, you know, this is going to bump, you know, any of the teachers that we're trying to bring into the profession, especially those that are you know, from our Black, Indigenous, and communities of color. I believe that, you know, this is going to bring purity and actually, you know, encourage those teachers that we're trying to attract into the profession. And I could tell that, you know, from my own experiences that these are, you know, very valuable folks that are there to help us, you know, along the way. And so I don't necessarily think that this is going to deter or, you know, bump anybody out of the profession.
Thank you, Representative Lee. We'll now move on to public testimony, and we have Matt Shaver with Ed Allies.
Madam Chair, I'm testifying on Representative Erdahl's bill. Sorry. Would you like me to testify now or wait until that one comes up?
You can wait until that bill comes up.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Okay. Very quickly, anyone that is currently on the call that is signed up to testify on behalf of House File 505, okay, hearing none and seeing no other hands up, Representative Lee, any last words on your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members for the opportunity to present House File 505. I will hope that the committee will consider this, and thank you for the questions, Representative Erickson. I will look into some of those suggestions that you brought forth earlier, too. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Lee. House File 505 is laid over.
I have some testimony in opposition of the bill.
Ms. Lewis, please proceed.
I'm sorry to interrupt that. I just wanted to make sure that I could get on the record today. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Kim Lewis, and I'm with the Minnesota School Boards Association. We represent all 333 locally elected school boards across Minnesota. We appreciate the opportunity to weigh in today on House File 505. I am also testifying on behalf of superintendents across Minnesota and their organizations, the Association of Metropolitan School Districts, and the Minnesota Association of School Administrators. Our organizations do have some concerns with the bill. We feel it does much more than make simple technical changes to the statute. The bill would have significant budgeting and program impacts that have been briefly introduced and discussed right here on community education and early childhood education and adult basic ed. By dividing the subdivision two and creating that second paragraph, early childhood family education teachers and adult basic education teachers would now be subject to the continuing contract provisions. Our concern stems from the fact that these programs are market-driven and do not have compulsory attendance requirements, which leads to unpredictable enrollment. Without flexibility that the current statute provides to adjust teaching loads, school districts would have to hire these teachers for the entire school year, regardless of student enrollment. So if we had a year like this and we did not have a steady flow of ECFB participants or what have you, we would still pay those teachers at a full rate. Also, ECFB students do not generate pupil units for funding purposes as K-12 students do. They are funded out of Fund 4, which is a community education fund. Thus, ECFB and ABE students do not bring funding to pay for teachers to do the work and the number of duty days that the K-12 staff does. The change would have contractual, financial, and program impacts in the ability for school boards and school districts to efficiently and effectively deliver the valuable opportunities that our adult learners and youngest learners in our school districts require. Finally, currently these individuals do not meet the definition of teacher in continuing contract laws, but are considered teachers for the purposes of PELRA, the Public Employment Labor Relations Act. Therefore, the exclusive representation of teachers may exert its right to represent these individuals in negotiations and include them in the appropriate unit. Doing so does not give them continuing contract rights. However, school districts can negotiate a separate article in their master agreements. They could have a separate list which states which portions of the master agreements apply to ECFE teachers and which do not. A separate payment structure is usually negotiated because their employment is market-driven and teachers are paid at a negotiated hourly rate rather than a yearly salary. Madam Chair, we appreciate you listening to our concerns and taking them into consideration. And with that, I'll stand for any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Lewis. So House File 505 has been laid over. We are at 125, and we will move on to House File 603. So for House File 603, I will just make a note for members that sections 2, 3, and 5 fall under the purview of this committee. And before we move on to asking Ms. Para to walk through those sections, Representative Scott.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I actually had a question for the bill's author of the previous bill as a follow-up to the last testifier. I just wanted to get his reaction to that. And then I was also going to move that the bill be re-referred to the Early Childhood Education Committee because it directly affects those folks. And so, but you saw my hand too late, so I don't. It looks like you've moved on to the next bill.
And it appears that Representative Lee has left as well. So we will move on, but can follow up on the other concern that you had. And if there's a question for Representative Lee, we can also make sure that those questions get to Representative Lee as well. House File 603, the sections of the bill that relate directly to education are sections 2, 3, and 5. Those are the ones that fall under the purview of this committee. And I will start by asking Ms. Para to walk through those three sections of the bill for the committee's consideration, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. House Bill 603 modifies provisions of the Public Employment Labor Relations Act. Section 2 modifies the definition of public employee. It makes part-time employees and separately temporary or seasonal employees working for a school district or charter school public employees under PLRAP, which would grant them the right to unionize and bargain collectively. Section 3 modifies the definition of terms and conditions of employment. It adds class sizes, student testing, and student-to-personnel ratios in school districts to the mandatory terms of collective bargaining under PLRAP, which means school districts and union representatives of the school district employees must meet and negotiate over these terms. And Section 5 requires public employers to provide union representatives with access to bargaining unit members at work, including meetings with members before, during, or after the workday or on break times, and 30-minute meetings with newly hired employees. It also gives union representatives the right to use government facilities and email systems for bargaining unit communications and meetings, investigations into grievances and workplace issues, administration of collective negotiations, and internal union matters. However, meetings cannot interfere with government operations or promote partisan activity, and associated costs may be charged to the union representative organization.
Thank you, Ms. Para. Representative Jordan, would you like to move your bill so it's officially before the committee, please?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Thank you. And please proceed with any of the testimony that you have related to House File 603.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. COVID-19 and the murder of George Floyd have really illuminated the inequities within our schools and broader communities that the legislature has been talking about for years. Our state has really struggled with racist policies in our communities, justice system.
Representative, sorry to interrupt you, but we're moving House File 603 to the Labor Committee.
Correct, Madam Chair. I move that so moved.
Okay. Thank you. Please continue.
Yes, thank you. So we as a state in Minnesota have really struggled with racist policies that we've seen reverberate around the state and all of our systems of government, but especially within our school system. And then for decades, our federal and state governments have been divesting from public education, which leaves educators and school districts with inadequate resources. These twin pandemics of racial inequities and COVID are not just about learning loss. So we've heard in this committee many times, there's collective trauma around losing loved ones to a virus and the economic strife and uncertainties that our families continue to endure. New examples of racial injustice in our criminal justice system and the dog whistle rhetoric that we've seen so much about during the pandemic have exacerbated this trauma. And we ask educators to do a lot. We ask educators to address the social and emotional learning in addition to academics. We are asking educators to address these academic needs, but emotional tolls, and they need to be able to strategize on the best ways to provide supports to struggling students and rebuild our schools. But in order to do so, educators need new and innovative tools in their toolboxes. Educators must be able to collectively organize around the real issues impacting our students: class sizes, support for English language learners, more school counselors, nurses, and social workers to address these growing mental health needs, the frequency of district-level testing in schools, and ratios for staff to students with special needs. House File 603 was designed to recognize that educators care about more than their compensation. They want to say in their students' learning conditions and the future of their profession, and it's time for our state law to reflect that. This bill would expand the list of mandatory subjects of bargaining to include class sizes, frequency and use of standardized tests not mandated by state law, and setting safe student-to-staff ratios for our education support professionals who work directly with students. It also reconciles state law with the Supreme Court Janus decision by guaranteeing union access to new hires and work sites so that they can explain rights at work, including the right to join a union, expanding collective bargaining rights to more part-time employees, which would align PELRA with our pension statute. It would protect employee privacy from solicitations by classifying designated addresses and phone numbers provided to licensing agencies as private data. And it explicitly bars claims for back dues collected during the 40 years in which collecting fair share fees was legal. In order to address the inequities that have become so visible during our pandemic, we need to have more conversations about our students' needs, not fewer. This bill recognizes the power of public decision-making and sheds lights on how districts make those staffing decisions at our school. I hope you will support House File 603. I am going to turn over testimony now to our testifiers, and I will also stand for questions at the end.
Thank you, Representative Jordan. Up first, I have Meg Luger-Nicolai.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to give a quick overview of the three of the sections that you discussed, 2, 3, and 5, from the perspective of Education Minnesota. First of all, Section 2 is intended to end a situation in which we've got an arbitrary carve out of individuals who are performing work, often the same work, next to other bargaining unit members, but they themselves are not permitted to be in a bargaining unit. And I want to be clear that this change, while it would allow an individual to be a member of the bargaining unit, it would not compel union membership. That is still a choice under PELRA that obviously hasn't changed. So this would simply make it the case that if you, for example, work 34% of a normal work week, but are doing precisely the same work as your colleague, you would still have the same access to the collective bargaining agreement and the benefits that your colleague does. With regard to Section 3, we just want to ensure that conversations around how to provide services to students, and especially in those situations where they touch on the working conditions of the adults who are providing the services, are things that can be fully discussed at the bargaining table. As is the case with the prior section, this is not something that changes the law on bargaining to the extent that the parties never have to. It doesn't mandate a concession, it doesn't mandate a particular agreement, but it gives the parties the full opportunity to air those issues amongst each other and often in a public setting, which bargaining can be, so that those can be discussed both with respect to the working conditions of the individuals who are bargaining, but also the students that they are serving. And then finally, Section 5 really is a response to the changing law. It's been made clear, and unions have definitely taken the note, that it's important to be accountable to the membership and available to their membership. And one of the ways that we can do that is to have access to them at their work sites, which of course is the place over which the union has the jurisdiction to help them and provide services to them. So one of the things that we heard in the wake of the Janus decision was that it would really increase the accountability of unions, and we agree, and we think that this would help facilitate us to be more accountable to our members, and so that they can understand the choice that they're making when they decide whether or not to join. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up, we have Peter Eckhoff with Robbinsdale Federation of Teachers.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Peter Eckhoff. I'm the president of the Robbinsdale Federation of Teachers, Local 872, where I have the opportunity to represent over 1,400 educators. I speak today in support of this legislation. I had the great fortune of enjoying a great working relationship with my administration in Robbinsdale, and we all highly value the right to of collective bargaining, and we believe that it lends great efficiency to our system of supporting quality teaching and learning environments. I believe this legislation supports the opportunity for all to build these productive relationships. We educators do value far more than our compensation, and we want more opportunity to have greater input and control in our learning environments at our work sites. We believe that we, as the experts in student instruction, should also have greater opportunity to bargain over more elements of our teaching conditions. These elements should include such topics as class sizes, our students to staff ratio, particularly for our education support professionals, and the frequency of the use of non-mandated standardized tests. Spending valuable instructional time with constant testing actually robs many of our most vulnerable and high-needs students of time that should be spent in further instruction. And we believe that we should engage in robust discussions around these topics. With the courts overturning over 40 years of settled law with the Janus case, it also compels us to ask the legislature to update our state statutes in order to support the continuation of high-quality labor management functioning in our school districts. The proposals in this legislation do just that. It includes union access to new hires at our work sites so that we can explain to them their rights at work. It expands bargaining rights to more part-time employees at schools that receive per-pupil funding, allowing us to represent all of our educators in these discussions. It also accounts for protecting employee privacy, and it importantly bars claims for back dues collected during the 40-year time when the courts allowed for the collection of our fair share fees. I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to appear before you here today. I'd be happy to entertain any questions you may have. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Up next, we have Kate Schmidt with Dakota County United Educators.
Good afternoon, Chair Richardson and committee members. My name is Kate Schmidt, and this is my 31st year as an educator. I'm an elementary school teacher from the Rosemont Apple Valley Egan School District. I'm on leave serving as president of Dakota County United Educators. Was the hardest decision of my life to leave my classroom to run a union. But I've done it because of students, and I'm here today because of students. I've also been on the negotiations team in my district for 11 contracts, which it covers 22 years. I'd like to talk about how House File 603 addresses important shortcomings in our bargaining laws that could improve public education for all students. Every 2 years, DQ surveys our members before we begin bargaining. I've noticed a pattern in our survey results over the last decade. Teacher responses on the survey show more interest in making changes to educational programming decisions for the benefit of our students rather than their own pocketbook. They want smaller class sizes, fewer assessment requirements, and more support professionals. Teachers want to provide input and have some control over the learning environments in their work sites and the future of their profession. They want this input and control to benefit students. It is time for state law to reflect that. There are three parts of this bill I'd like to highlight. First of all, class size matters. I have personally experienced class sizes ranging from 17 students to 33 students in my elementary classrooms. There is no comparison in the quality of education students received when they were in the class of 17. I knew their skills, interests, and dreams better than any class before. That class of students showed the best growth and learning I have had in my career. decisions around such an important thing as class size should be discussed and negotiated so the public can see and weigh in and tell the school board and my union what they believe is best for kids. Secondly, teachers are not opposed to tests. I believe we invented them. However, we also understand the importance of the timing of tests and the number of tests that make learning most effective. This information is important. Unfortunately, over the course of my career, I have seen an exponential increase in the number of assessments given to students over the course of a year. Test preparation and practice has taken over our curriculum. As an example, an elementary school teacher in my district is required to give individual reading and math district mandated assessments to each student. While assessing each student, the rest of the class is asked to engage in managed independent learning. It takes approximately 30 to 45 minutes to complete each one of these assessments. With a class of 25 students, which most of my teachers do not have right now, that means 12 hours of class time is lost each time a district required assessment is given. Seeing that we do both of those assessments three times a year, 75 hours of direct teaching time is lost. Additionally, my district uses MAP testing as well as another district mandated assessment. For context, my students have approximately 940 hours of instruction in a normal school year. A loss of 79 hours is significant. Almost 9% of their time is being spent being assessed or learning on their own while others are being assessed. And this doesn't include MCA tests or access testing. Allowing the public to witness how educators can negotiate over the frequency and use of standardized tests not mandated by state law should be part of a systems change. Lastly, let's admit it. Schools are being asked to do more and more each year. I, like Peter, am lucky enough to work in a school district that has a great relationship with our district, and we have a licensed school nurse in every school. It still isn't enough. The school nurses in our high schools are responsible for 2,000 plus students. They are helping students manage their diabetes, manage concussion protocols, deal with teen pregnancy, and a variety of other health issues. The pandemic has also highlighted the mental health needs of our students. Currently, our middle school and high school counselors have a caseload of over 500 plus students each. I'm sorry, I misspoke, 400 plus students each. How can they possibly meet the needs of our individual students? Our special education classrooms who need paraprofessional support to run an effective and efficient classroom are also struggling. Decisions regarding the number of paraprofessionals in a classroom should be based on need, not budget. Again, teachers understand the important role all these individuals play in our schools, and allowing the public to witness how educators can negotiate over the number of support professionals as necessary should be part of a systems change. As you consider this bill, I would ask you to think about this system where decisions are made solely by those administrators in power. That system has failed teachers, and it's failing many of our students. This bill helps change that system. Thank you for allowing me to speak.
Thank you for your testimony. We will move into public testimony before going to member questions. We've got Deb Hinton, the Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of School Administrators.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good afternoon, and members of the committee. I am Deb Hinton, the Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of School Administrators, and I do have some thoughts on HF 603, Representative Jordan's bill. I am speaking today on behalf of MASA, the Minnesota School Boards Association, and the Association of Metropolitan School Districts. The Public Employee Labor Relations Act, also referred to as PELRA, has long served as a guide for public schools in negotiating with full-time employees. Bargaining units and school districts come together regularly and are careful to negotiate within the limitations of the Act. It kind of serves as a Bible of sorts for contract negotiations. We have three main concerns with the amended language outlined in the bill. First, school districts need as much flexibility as possible to staff their schools. This year has highlighted how unpredictable student enrollment can be. But the fluctuation in enrollment is an annual factor school boards and school districts must address through their budgeting and staffing processes. Using census data, the survival rate of classes moving through the system and other factors provides helpful information in projecting enrollment each year, but are not exact in predicting how many students will show up in September. The vast majority of a school district's funding is based on student enrollment. So why is this important? The proposed language change to PELRA under terms and conditions for employment would allow class size and personnel ratios to be negotiated. When class size and personnel ratios are predetermined by contract negotiations, a school district's financial situation becomes irrelevant and school districts lose flexibility along with the ability to be creative. Thus, if a district has declining enrollment leading to a loss of revenue, but must maintain a specific personnel ratio or class size given what has been negotiated in a contract, the district may need to lay off much needed support staff like counselors, nurses, mental health staff, and others critical to providing support for our students.
Time.
If the enrollment decline occurs in September after budgets have already been adopted, school districts must maintain the staff under contract and carry a deficit throughout the school year that eventually will have to be dealt with. Second, the new language would require student testing to be negotiated. The state determines many of the tests administered in our schools. While we certainly freely express our opinions about the types and numbers of tests required by the state, we understand that the state must meet federal testing requirements and our impact is limited. While districts use interim testing to determine which students are progressing, the majority of the tests are determined at the state level because of federal requirements. There simply is little to negotiate with regard to testing. Finally, the addition of part-time employees under the amended language proposed to PELRA would require school superintendents and school boards to negotiate terms and conditions with a group that is generally quite small and in some school districts limited to maybe just a couple of staff. Bargaining with a unit of that size would be unnecessary, as when part-time staff are hired, their contracts are generally based off of contracts with full-time employees in similar positions. In other words, part-time employees are generally paid proportionately to those in full-time positions, and those salaries, benefits, and terms of employment have already been negotiated between the school district and the school board. In essence, the part-time employees have been part of negotiations in most cases, given the practice of school districts to prorate benefits and salaries according to contracts already in place. The statute defines terms and conditions of employment to include hours of employment.
Ms. Hinson, I'm going to ask you to wrap up your testimony because we do have other public testifiers.
Sure, I'm happy to do so, Chair Richardson. I will just say then we are available for further discussion. We appreciate your consideration of our comments and we do not believe the changes referenced today are necessary. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Hinson, for your testimony. Douglas Seaton.
Yes, Chair Richardson, can you hear me?
Yes, you're coming through clearly. Please proceed.
Very good. Sorry, I can't get my camera to take at the moment. I'm the president of the Upper Midwest Law Center, and I've been asked to testify about some of these provisions. I will comment since several speakers have addressed the details of them. I'll comment briefly on the Section 2 and Section 3 issues. I would just submit that what is being proposed is a dramatic change in the original drafting of the PELRA provisions and their major amendments in subsequent years. I was with House Research and was the nonpartisan draftsman on a great deal of that work. And I would say that we tried to mirror the National Labor Relations Act in many of these provisions to try to keep labor law on the same keel that it's been in the national field and in other states as well. And exclusion of part-timers, temporaries, seasonal employees is meant to protect both the bargaining unit and the exclusive representative, for that matter, because these individuals do not have quite the same interest as others in the bargaining unit. They're antecedent to the district. They're not really attached to the bargaining unit, and it would be a very dramatic change in the nature of the bargaining relationships to be including these individuals in the bargaining units, or even more complicated, creating separate tiny vestigial units for them, as has been testified to. The other issues that are a problem are the negotiation of class size and testing issues. These are not terms and conditions of employment, as has been understood since the 1930s in labor relations. So I again would say these would be very, very poor changes to be making. The access to email facilities is a very controversial, of the employer, is a very controversial topic all over the country. It's been subject to a great deal of criticism at the National Labor Relations Board when it was attempted to be introduced there. It has since been discontinued, and for good reason. The employer should have control of its own facilities. The union has a great many ways to communicate and should communicate, of course, but email should not be one of them. Lastly, I would say, in my last minute or two, that the liability provision, several witnesses have commented about it here, is not Janus decision compliance at all. Janus decision, the United States Supreme Court decision that said that employees should not be required to join or pay money to unions that they do not support. Unions serve a very good purpose for those who wish to be represented and wish to support them. But the compliance with Janus would instead require that the public employer and the union convey expressly to employees the fact that they have a right to not support the union, and that there be a documented way to show that they are either not waiving that right or that they are waiving it. And this is not what's provided in this law. So the idea that this is compliance with the Janus decision is simply not at all true. And what's more, we represent at the Upper Midwest Law Center many public employees who are fighting to have their right to discontinue their dues payments and resign from their unions recognized by many of the unions, including those testifying here today, and they're being trampled in their right to do that. And this statute is designed if it could be enforced, it would cut off their right to a remedy the federal courts may ultimately impose, that the union should disgorge agency fee payments that they have collected over time that are now found to be unconstitutional. And there is a fight going on in the courts right now about that. We're representing multiple public employees in those pieces of litigation. And I think they should be recognized and allowed to proceed with their activity and with these lawsuits. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Seaton, for your testimony. So I will let members know that we have six hands raised, and we have eight amendments that we have to get through. And we're moving to a vote at 2:10. And I will start with member questions. Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And one of the things that the testifier from, I believe it was Robbinsdale, I don't really remember who said it, but they said that it was in the best interest of the students let me start over. my question is, how is it in the best interest of students for teachers to be called out of the classroom for 30 minutes to visit with their union rep? How is that beneficial when our kids are already behind in classroom time right now? How is that beneficial to have that teacher called out of the classroom?
Thank you, Representative Scott. Mr. Eckhoff was with Robbinsdale. Would you like to take that question?
Sure, I'd be happy to. As a matter of fact, I don't believe that you'll find any local that pulls teachers from actual minutes where they are engaged directly with students to have these conversations, but rather are taking the opportunity while the teacher is present at their work site. Most of the meetings that I have with individuals are during their personal preparation time, where I get an opportunity to touch base with them while they're actually in their physical space where they're working. It allows us some of that flexibility to have interaction, answer questions, and support teachers. But I have never been engaged in a conversation with a teacher during their instructional time, unless it's been to represent them when they have been pulled by an administrator during their instructional time to have a conversation, and I'm there to represent the due process rights of the individual in that discussion. So I would assert that none of us are here arguing to take away teachers from their instructional interaction and support of students to have these conversations, but rather have the right to be interacting with them on worksite to answer and support questions during their prep time, their lunch time, other opportunities that are the time where they're not engaged with students.
Madam Chair, just real quickly follow up. If the testifier or the bill's author could point to me a place in the bill where it restricts when a teacher can have these or the union rep can have these conversations with teachers, that would be helpful.
Representative Jordan, would you like to take that or defer to one of your testifiers?
I will defer to Ms. Luger to walk through Representative Scott's question.
Sure. The answer to that is at lines 4.29 through 5.2, which refer to conduct worksite meetings during lunch and other breaks and before and after the workday. And then with respect to the concern about the 30 minutes, I think that's particularly viewed as something that might be part of staff onboarding, which doesn't take place simultaneously with student instruction. And, you know, for teachers, they have a dedicated workshop week prior to the start of the school year and before the kids are at school. So that would presumably be the time, place when I think that would take place.
And Madam Chair, thank you. And to whoever wants to answer the question, because this bill is allowing the new onboarded teacher or employee's home address to be given to the union rep, does that mean that they can expect a visit from their union rep at their home? Otherwise, why would they need that address?
Representative Scott, in terms of the data pieces, I believe this bill is going to be going to judiciary as well to address those. Representative Jordan, any response to Representative Scott?
Yes, that piece will be, yes, thank you, Madam Chair. And to Representative Scott, that piece will be addressed in judiciary. I don't know that the bill is there to allow, you know, for public, it won't be released to the public. It'll be released to the union and the bargaining unit for union business. That could entail, you know, mailing letters, mailing forms, and communicating via mail with a member, for example.
Thank you, Representative Jordan. We will take one more question here and then move to amendments and then come back to questions. Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have a quick comment and I have a question for you then, actually. But my comment is, I think collaboration is so important. And as a former teacher, I appreciated being able to collaborate with my administrators and talk about what kind of testing is best for students, how much, how often, and so on. When we have collaboration between administrators, teachers, and parents, the ones closest to those students, I think the best education takes place. However, when we move something to a bargaining table, it becomes driven by different people, sometimes outside of the school district. And I feel like that is going to really clamp down on collaboration and limit that. And that's something I really appreciated as a teacher. So I just wanted to make that comment. My question for you, Madam Chair, is there are a lot of components in here that are going to greatly affect the finances of a school district, such as class size and so on. Is this going to be referred to the Education Finance Committee?
Thank you, Representative Bennett. So in terms of where the bill is going next, where it's going to be heard in labor, and Representative Jordan, do you want to walk us through where the bill would be headed?
Sure, Madam Chair. And also, Representative Bennett, to your point, these should be collaborations. Negotiations are a collaboration for districts and for their educators and for communities. So opening up this ability to collaborate by this bill is something that will actually allow us to have that conversation in the open, to really talk about the effects of class sizes, to talk about the effects of testing on our students. As far as the bill path goes, Madam Chair, the bill is definitely going to labor next. It also needs to make a stop in judiciary. I wouldn't mind having it heard in education finance as well. There have been a number of points brought up about education finance, and I think to both this bill and other concerns about making sure that we have flexibility and are adequately funding education, that's another thing that the legislature really needs to work on and address so that our districts are not fighting with each other and not having to negotiate over funding. We need to actually fund our districts, and we can do that here in this committee and in the Education Finance Committee.
Thank you, Representative Jordan. Moving on to amendments here, we've received a number of amendments. I believe we have 8 before us currently. Representative Erickson, did you want to move any of these amendments? I'll defer to you on the order.
Madam Chair, we'd like to move all of them. I think Representative Scott was going to move the A1 amendment, but if she's had to step out for a second, I will offer the A1 amendment and ask for a roll call.
Okay. Did you want to say more to present on the A1 amendment, Representative Erickson?
Well, yes, I would. Thank you very much. The personnel data necessary to run an election would likely include an employee's location of work and work telephone number, and this data is already public data under Chapter 13. Additionally, the section of law makes reference to fair share fee assessments, which are no longer mandatory following the Janus opinion from the United States Supreme Court. And finally, in removing responsible authority, and I put that in quotes, from the current statutory language, it is now unclear who would determine what personnel data is needed by the union. And so with that, Madam Chair, I move to delete Section 1 of this House File 603.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Again, we're looking at specifically for this committee, Sections 2, 3, and 5 of the bill. Representative Jordan, I will let you respond.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Erickson. I think Section 1 is very important to this bill. This is critical information that unions need to be able to communicate with members exactly about decisions such as the Janus decision and about their union dues. So I think this is a very important part of the bill and should remain in.
Thank you, Representative Jordan. Ms. Larson, can you please call the roll?
Chair Richardson?
No.
Vice Chair Hassan?
No.
Representative Erickson?
Yes.
Representative Drazkowski?
Aye.
Representative Bennett? Representative Bennett? Representative Berg?
No.
Representative Bow?
Aye.
Representative Christensen?
No.
Representative Edelson?
No.
Representative Feist?
No.
Representative Frazier?
No.
Representative Jordan?
No.
Representative Keeler?
No.
Representative Moeller?
No.
Representative Mueller?
Mueller votes aye.
Representative Poston, excused. Representative Scott?
Aye.
Representative Erdahl?
Aye.
Representative Wasilewicz?
No.
Representative Bennett? Madam Chair, there are 6 ayes and 11 nays.
Thank you, Ms. Larson. The noes have it. We'll move on to the A2 amendment. Representative Erickson, do you know who's presenting that amendment?
Madam Chair, I'll move the A2 amendment to delete Section 2 and note that this section expands the scope of public employees for collective bargaining to include part-time employees and currently exempted temporary or seasonal employees working fewer than 67 days for a school district or a charter school. But, you know, when you look at this section, it appears to focus more on increasing the pool of employees from which the union can collect dues rather than meeting the best interests of employees who are providing part-time or temporary service on behalf of our students. And that is so important in this day when we are experiencing the closure of our schools for a year or more, and our students, in many cases, are so far behind. And Madam Chair, I request a roll call.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I respectfully oppose Representative Erickson's amendment. I think it's very important that we have alignment with our pension law, and it's important that we are making sure that everyone who wants to be part of a bargaining unit has the right to do so. So I request a no vote.
Thank you, Representative Jordan. Ms. Larson, please take the roll.
Chair Richardson?
No.
Vice Chair Hassan?
No.
Representative Erickson?
Aye.
Representative Drozdkowski?
Aye.
Representative Bennett? Representative Berg?
No.
Representative Bowe? Representative Bowe? Representative Christensen?
No.
Representative Edelson?
No.
Representative Feist?
No.
Representative Frazier?
No.
Representative Jordan?
No.
Representative Keeler?
No.
Representative Moeller?
No.
Representative Mueller?
Mueller votes yes.
Representative Poston excused. Representative Scott?
Yes.
Representative Erdahl?
Yes.
Representative Wasilewicz?
No.
Representative Bennett? Representative Bowe?
Yes.
Madam Chair, there are 6 ayes and 11 nays.
Thank you, Ms. Larson. The A2 amendment is not adopted. Representative Erickson to the A3 amendment.
Madam Chair, I move the A3 amendment and request a roll call. This Section 3 expands the scope of terms and conditions of employment subject to collective bargaining to include class size, student testing, and student-to-personnel ratios. It is not practical or realistic for the state to allow school districts to bargain away federally mandated assessments under the Every Student Succeeds Act or requirements by the state for schools to allow high school students to take a college entrance exam during a school day. So the language in this proposal, 603, is problematic because it is going to hurt our students if teachers are not allowed to collaborate when they discuss these issues. So, Madam Chair, I ask again for an aye vote, a yes vote.
Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This section is good for students and it's good for educators because it expands the scope of bargaining to include and allow educators to bargain for smaller class sizes, reduction in testing that are not mandated by the state, and for student to staff ratios. very important part of the bill, and I request a no vote.
Thank you, Representative Jordan. Ms. Larson, please take the roll.
Chair Richardson?
No.
Vice Chair Hassan?
No.
Representative Erickson?
Aye.
Representative Drazkowski?
Aye.
Representative Bennett? Representative Berg?
No.
Representative Bowe?
Aye.
Representative Christensen?
No.
Representative Edelson?
No.
Representative Feist?
No.
Representative Frazier?
No.
Representative Jordan?
No.
Representative Keeler?
No.
Representative Moeller?
No.
Representative Mueller?
Mueller votes yes.
Representative Poston, excused. Representative Scott?
Yes.
Representative Erdahl?
Yes.
Representative Wasilick?
No.
Representative Bennett? Madam Chair, there are 6 ayes and 11 nays.
Thank you, Ms. Larson. The A3 amendment is not adopted. Representative Erickson to...
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move the A4 amendment and request a roll call. This section denies current and former teachers of any right to file a claim or cause of action to recover any fees paid to the union without their consent. So I'm moving to delete this because there is a lawsuit that has been filed by teachers, and this would remove their standing while waiting for their day in court, which is not right. There's also no way we can know that every teacher from which fair share fees were garnished did not have an expectation that they might be able to recover some or all of it. And please remember that between 2014 and 2018, the unions knew that forced fair share fees stood on shaky ground, and they bear some responsibility for their reliance on these fees. To now act like the decision handed down by the Supreme Court in 2018 was a complete surprise and without any warning is disingenuous. I ask for an aye vote.
Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This part of the bill is very important. You know, unions did collect fair share dues when it was legal for 40 years, as we've heard from other testimony, and it's important that they are not held to harm for collecting dues for so long. I request a no vote.
Thank you, Representative Jordan. Ms. Larson, please take the roll.
Chair Richardson?
No.
Vice Chair Hassan? Representative Erickson?
Aye.
Representative Drazkowski?
Aye.
Representative Bennett? Representative Berg?
No.
Representative Bowe?
Aye.
Representative Christensen?
No.
Representative Edelson?
No.
Representative Feist?
No.
Representative Frazier?
No.
Representative Jordan?
No.
Representative Keeler?
No.
Representative Moeller?
No.
Representative Mueller?
Mueller votes yes.
Representative Poston, excused. Representative Scott? Representative Scott? Representative Erdahl?
Yes.
Representative Wasilick?
No.
Representative Bennett? Representative Scott? Madam Chair, there are 5 ayes and 11 nays.
Thank you, Ms. Larson. The amendment is not adopted. Moving on to the A5 amendment, Representative Erickson.
Madam Chair, I move the A5 amendment. This would delete Section 5. This section requires public employees to provide unions access to union members during working hours, the right to conduct worksite meetings during lunch or other breaks, the right to meet with newly hired employees on time paid for by the employer, the right to use the public employer email system. You know, when you think about this, there's no specific provision that appears to give the employee the option or the right to reject these mandated meetings with a union official. Unions have the right to conduct union business with their resources, but school mail systems have been funded by the taxpayers and include teachers who may choose not to join or participate with the union. With that, Madam Chair, I ask for a yes vote.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Section 5 is very important to this bill. It allows educators and their bargaining units the ability to organize through space and district emails, et cetera, and is a very important part of this bill, so I urge a no vote.
Thank you, Representative Jordan. Ms. Larson, please take the roll.
Chair Richardson?
No.
Vice Chair Hassan?
No.
Representative Erickson?
Aye.
Representative Drazkowski?
Aye.
Representative Bennett? Representative Berg?
No.
Representative Bo?
Aye.
Representative Christensen?
No.
Representative Edelson?
No.
Representative Feist?
No.
Representative Frazier?
No.
Representative Jordan?
No.
Representative Keeler?
No.
Representative Moeller?
No.
Representative Mueller?
Mueller votes yes.
Representative Poston, excuse. Representative Scott? Representative Erdahl?
Yes.
Representative Wasilek?
No.
Representative Bennett? Representative Scott? Madam Chair, there are 5 ayes and 11 nays.
Thank you, Ms. Larson. The amendment is not adopted. Representative Erickson, to the A6 amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I do move the A6 amendment, which would delete Section 6. This section requires public schools to provide the union with personal information on file, including home addresses and private email, within 10 days of hiring, and an updated list of all employees every 120 days. And Madam Chair, you know, I do request a roll call. So employees not wishing to join the union or to be solicited to join the union should not have to give their personal information, including their home address, to the union. Why would the union want home addresses? Why do they want to know where people live, where these teachers live? So the only remedy available to teachers not wanting this information shared with the union is to refuse to give it to the school. Therefore, I ask for a yes vote on the A6 amendment.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to this amendment, I urge a no vote. It would remove many provisions that are essential for union organizing. And just as a reminder, no one is compelled to join the union. So I urge a no vote. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Jordan. Ms. Larson, please take the roll.
Chair Richardson?
No.
Vice Chair Hassan? No. Representative Erickson?
Aye.
Representative Drazkowski?
Aye.
Representative Bennett? Representative Berg?
No.
Representative Bo?
Aye.
Representative Christensen?
No.
Representative Edelson?
No.
Representative Feist?
No.
Representative Frazier?
No.
Representative Jordan?
No.
Representative Keeler?
No.
Representative Moeller?
No.
Representative Mueller?
Mueller votes yes.
Representative Poston excused. Representative Scott?
Aye.
Representative Erdahl?
Yes.
Representative Wasilewicz?
No.
Representative Bennett? Madam Chair, there are 6 ayes and 11 nays.
Thank you, Ms. Larson. The amendment is not adopted. I will just let members know that we are going to have to reschedule Representative Erdahl's bills. We still have a couple of amendments to get through, but again, we will have a point certain to which we will have to take a vote at 2:25 on the current bill. Representative Erickson to the next amendment, the A7.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I do offer the A7 amendment, which deletes Section 7, and request a roll call. You know, this section is about an arbitrator issuing a protective order, and I don't think it's the responsibility of an education policy committee to change the scope of information that could be subject to an arbitrator's protective order. Without more information or expert testimony, we don't know what the consequences of this would be. With that, Madam Chair, I ask for a yes vote.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Section 7 is important to the bill because this is a section that gives data information to those representing someone going into arbitration. And I'd agree with Representative Erickson that this is outside the scope of education policy, which is why this bill will be going to judiciary, where we will be looking at this section. For now, I urge a no vote.
Thank you, Representative Jordan. Ms. Larson, please take the roll.
Chair Richardson?
No.
Vice Chair Hassan?
Nope.
Representative Erickson?
Aye.
Representative Drazkowski?
Aye.
Representative Bennett? Representative Berg?
No.
Representative Bowe?
Aye.
Representative Christensen?
No.
Representative Edelson?
No.
Representative Feist?
No.
Representative Frazier?
No.
Representative Jordan?
No.
Representative Keeler?
No.
Representative Moeller?
No.
Representative Mueller?
Mueller votes yes.
Representative Poston excused. Representative Scott?
Yes.
Representative Erdahl?
Yes.
Representative Wasilewicz?
No.
Representative Bennett? Madam Chair, there are 6 ayes and 11 nays.
Thank you, Ms. Larson. The amendment is not adopted, and we have the DE2 amendment. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I do move the DE2 amendments. It's a delete all amendment to replace the bill with new language that would classify teachers as essential employees. And you know, there's no time like the present to realize how essential teachers are to our students and to our parents and to the public. Day after day, we hear these very, very sad, alarming stories about the loss of learning, the isolation that our children are feeling. There is so much to point to the fact that they all feel that their teachers are essential. And with that, you know, I think 603, it has none of these priorities. We're not getting children back at the classroom. And that's what's so important. At this point, we should be discussing, debating, talking about how do we get our children back in the classroom and how do we restore the loss of learning that's taken place for some students over a year. Madam Chair, I ask for a yes vote and call for a roll call.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This language is not what this bill is about. It removes the right of educators to strike, which is an important right. Not only that, educator strikes in Minnesota are very rare, and I urge a no vote on this amendment.
Thank you, Representative Jordan. Ms. Larson, please take the roll.
Chair Richardson?
No.
Vice Chair Hassan?
No.
Representative Erickson?
Aye.
Representative Drazkowski?
Aye.
Representative Bennett?
Are you muted?
Representative Berg?
No.
Representative Bell?
Aye.
Representative Christensen?
No.
Representative Edelson?
No.
Representative Feist?
No.
Representative Frazier?
No.
Representative Jordan?
No.
Representative Keeler?
No.
Representative Moeller?
No.
Representative Mueller?
Mueller votes yes.
Representative Poston excused. Representative Scott?
Aye.
Representative Erdahl?
No.
Representative Wasilek?
No.
Representative Bennett?
Aye.
Madam Chair, there are 6 ayes and 12 nays.
Thank you, Ms. Larson. The amendment is not adopted. I will just remind members that this bill has some additional stops to be made, and that will definitely allow for more conversation and discussion on several of the issues that have been raised here. With that, Representative to your bill, any final comments on your bill? I'll give you the last word.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, I ask for your support. This is a bill that puts the priorities of students, families, and educators on the bargaining table which is right where they should be. So I ask for your support on this bill, and thank you for listening to myself and all of our testifiers today.
Thank you, Representative Jordan. Representative Jordan renews her motion that House File 603 be re-referred to the Labor Committee. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Richardson?
Yes.
Vice Chair Hassan?
Aye.
Representative Erickson?
No.
Representative Drazkowski?
No.
Representative Bennett?
No.
Representative Berg?
Yes.
Representative Bow?
Bow votes no.
Representative Christensen?
Yes.
Representative Edelson?
Aye.
Representative Feist?
Aye.
Representative Frazier?
Aye.
Representative Jordan?
Aye.
Representative Keeler?
Aye.
Representative Moeller?
Aye.
Representative Mueller?
Mueller votes no.
Representative Poston? Excused. Representative Scott?
No.
Representative Erdahl?
No.
Representative Wasilek?
Yes.
Madam Chair, there are 11 ayes and 7 nays.
Thank you, Ms. Larson. The motion prevails and House File 603 is re-referred to the Labor Committee. Congratulations, Representative Jordan. And with that, there being no further business before the committee, we are adjourned.